In this episode of the Startup Chat, we're going to talk about going from 10 to 100 customers and beyond.
And you should listen to learn what things to do and which mistakes to avoid.
I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life. And hopefully, while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit. We got it.
For people trying to get shit done.
Yeah. We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
We want you to do your best. Hi, I'm Heaton Shaw.
And I'm Stelly Efty.
So one of the most requested topics after we did the Getting Your First Customers episode was getting from 10 to 100 customers, 100 to 1,000, 1,000 to 10,000. Basically, what do we do at the other stages?
Right.
Right. And I definitely wanted to address that with you because I think we're going to have different perspectives on it. And it'll be a pretty healthy discussion, right?
Cool.
So I'll start with what my thinking is and what essentially I think you have to do no matter what.
Okay.
So when you got from 0 to 10, you essentially did some form of customer research, whether it's like, oh, it's just your opinion, then you're the customer, fine. Or you went and talked to a lot of people. Hopefully you talked to a lot of people, did some user research when you were actually designing your product and actually had sales calls and figured out what objections were so you could address all this stuff, right? And that got you to 10. Yeah. Now all of a sudden you have 10 customers, right? Getting to 100 is actually pretty challenging. I mean, I'll be honest, because you're 10Xing for the first time.
Right.
0 to 10, that was already hard. This is not, in some ways, this is harder. But the reason is now you have the perspective of usage, right? Someone's using your product or using your service. You're providing value to them. And so the tactic I always use at all these stages is learn as much as you can about everything that's happening that's under your control that you can measure, optimize, learn from. So that's like, so if it's only 10, I'd go really deep into all 10 and try to understand as much as I can. Some people would say, you know, some people love going into an office and saying, can I shadow you for a day, right? Whatever it takes, right? Yeah. You turn every sales call into a customer development call,
right?
I've seen that work too at that phase because once you have 10, it's likely you have some systems to keep getting more.
Yeah.
You've got some more leads. I've never seen a case where someone has 10 and they don't have more leads.
Right.
If they do tell me that for some reason, I'd be like, well, you got 10 customers. If anyone loves you, they'll at least tell one person about it. So go ask them to, right? And then you can get into the whole sales ways to do referrals and all that. So I wanted to kick it off with that, which is like what people forget is you already have customers.
Mm-hmm.
Your depth of understanding of that will actually help you move forward, especially in the early days.
So so that's a really good point. And one thing that I've been, one piece of advice I've been giving more and more is that I think every time you hit one of these customer milestones, you go 0 to 1, 1 to 10, 10 to 100, 100 to 1,000, you need to check yourself before you wreck yourself. I think that one thing, one mistake that companies make, this is, you know, most startups are just interested, how do I get to that next milestone, right? Once we hit 100, we're like, okay, how do we get to 1,000? All I want to know is how to get to 1,000, Stelly. Just don't tell me any of that shit about like wrecking, checking, or any of that. Like, just how do I get to 1,000? The problem is that if you go from 100 to 1,000 and you did not acquire the right type of customers, you're dead and you just don't realize it. So I'll give you an example of what I mean by checking yourself. I think that at every stage you need to do what you just explore or elaborated on, which is you need to learn more about your customers and you need to figure out who are my most successful customers so that I can focus on them and get more of these.
So the argument I've heard with all this stuff about 10, so let's specifically talk about 10 to 100. Then we can see if we have time for the rest, right? But the buckets are important because I think the buckets are relevant.
Yeah.
So your point is basically like you'll get really sloppy if you just start piling on customers.
Yes.
And you'll end up with high churn or you end up with lots of customer support requests, stuff like that.
You'll end up in a situation like I had a few weeks ago where you've raised a Series B, you have like $30 million in funding, you have 80 employees, you have 100 enterprise or larger customers, and you're on a phone call with me and as three founders and you ask me all these questions on how to launch into new verticals, new industries, new countries, and at some point I'll ask you, hey, out of the 100 customers, help me out here, who are your most successful 10 customers? Because you have such a wide range of customers. And then there's going to be silence. Until 5 seconds later, one of the founders will go, I don't fucking know. Do you guys know? And everybody will agree, we don't know.
That's when you get off the call and say, go find out and call me back.
Yes.
Right now.
Yes, because I don't even want to fucking talk about new verticals with you.
No, let's talk about what you already know or what you should already know.
And also, there's a distinction between happy and successful customers. And people don't confuse these two things. happy means just somebody, a human being, feels emotionally good about paying you money, right? That's one thing, cool. Yeah. But successful means, in my definition at least, you're generating more value to them than you're charging them, and they know that.
Yeah, we call that ROI in marketing.
There you go.
So are we giving them an ROI? So are they getting a return on this investment that, I'd even go further, right, in my mind, which is are we giving them a return on the investment that not only do we think we're giving them, but they can verbalize.
Yes.
And when you start getting into that, you're like, well, can we just tell them what value we're giving them? Yeah. How do we calculate the value? Can our interface show it for them?
Right.
Right. But anyways, it's ROI. Like
it's ROI, and it's whatever you want to call it, realized ROI.
Yeah.
In the sense
sure.
That there are companies that deliver ROI, but the customer doesn't know it.
That's what I mean. The customer has to be able to say it, or it doesn't mean anything.
So the reason why that's so important when you go from 10 to 100 is that you don't want, like, let's assume you have 10 fairly different customers at the beginning,
sure.
right?
Yeah,
and one of them has a much higher ROI, is much more successful than the other 9.
Yeah,
you don't want to add another 90 of these 9,
no,
right? And neglect the type of customer you need more of, which is the successful one,
right?
And why? Because these customers are going to be creating more support requests. They're going to be churning a lot faster. They're going to be negative word of mouth for you. They're going to be hitting morale and making everybody in the company suffer and hate their life. They're going to be toxic.
So let's call that, you have to make sure you're setting yourself up for success.
Right.
Right. So let's say they've set themselves up for success, right?
Yeah.
I'm wondering your take on a question that I get a lot, which is, when I say, hey, you need to go talk to those customers, and then I get into the whole, maybe you need to shadow them, but get a real depth of understanding, they're like, but I only have 10 customers.
Yeah, that's great. Then you only have to visit 10.
Exactly.
Like, there's no such thing as secondhand insights. Such a thing doesn't exist. And when you're at 10 customers, you are still in the face of learning. Like, you are not, like, whoever understands your customer best will own them eventually.
That's
and if
right.
you don't understand
that is
your
totally
customer,
right. Can you say that again?
Whoever understands the customer best will eventually own them.
Yeah, that needs to be a quote above everyone's wall, straight up.
that is it. So if your competitor understands your customer a little bit better than you, they will get them eventually.
Yeah.
And when you have 10, no matter how much you think you know because you did quote-unquote customer development, you don't know jack shit yet about
it. You should know everyone's kids' names.
Oh, you should
let's go real far, right? Like that's especially when you only have 10.
Yes.
The hack I can give people, and I did this and it was painful, but for I think it was 2 years for both of my SaaS companies, I did customer support myself.
There you go.
I think it was like up to 2 years. Yeah, someone helped me like the last 6 months of that. So 0 to 18 months.
Yeah.
Totally myself. And the reason is all these reasons you're talking about. I can hack being close firsthand by handling every customer support request.
That's awesome.
Knowing every single customer, getting up on the live chat and all that stuff. Because the most important thing is that every single one of those customers at that time.
Everything you can do to decrease the distance between you and your customers is something you should be doing.
Yeah.
So that means don't have anybody else answer most of the emails. Answer all of the emails yourself, right?
Yeah.
Your newsletter should be the founder's email address.
That's
so
right.
You get the replies to it.
Absolutely.
That's one. Yeah. Support. You should be in support on the phone, in chat, in email. Supporting the people that struggle, that have questions, that suffer, that don't know how to use something, right? The people that have problems. You should, if you can, not just virtually communicate, but also on the phone.
Yeah.
And even better, in person, right? There's nothing better than visiting your customers. It's so hard to do in today's world. It's so painful. I tell this to founders all the time, mainly so I hear myself say
I understand.
So I take my own advice.
I have the same problem. We need to talk about that for a second.
Yeah.
No matter what we say on this, we all have a hard time with it.
Yeah. Because it feels, it's very contrary to our habits and the way that our typical workday looks like and feels. It feels like a massive disruption.
You know, there were companies, I just thought about this. There's companies that went so far as there was, I think, an 800 number that was a founder CEO's cell phone.
Right.
There's some financial company competing with Mint, I think, Wasabi or something, that did this back in the day.
They did that.
It was really cool. I think they were one of the first ones to popularize it.
Yeah.
Do it.
The value you're getting from visiting your customer is just insane. Every time I do it, every single time I was in Berlin just a few weeks ago and visited a customer, every time I have to do a customer visit, honestly, that day of the visit, I want to find all these reasons not to go. And everything in my being is fighting against having to go there.
Yeah.
But then when I walk out that door, every single time I go, I need to visit more customers.
Yes, yes,
need to visit more customers.
I need to be around these people.
There's so much I'm learning every single time.
So the couple game-changing things we did at Kissmetrics was we actually, when we had, we were a distributed team. Mm-hmm. So actually, when we had everyone come into town, we had a customer show up and talk.
Nice.
Just they showed us how they use the product and everything. Nice. One time we did it so that we did it, you know, just a small group of us, 10, 15 of us. Another time it was like 30, 40 of us, and the customer was on stage.
Nice.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. That's awesome. It was really fun.
Okay, so you from 10 to 100, you're still in the business of learning.
Yes.
You're still in the business of understanding your customer better, trying to figure out which ones do we need to focus on our marketing, our sales, our product development, right? Because we got 10, that means there's some interest, but we still need to learn who is...
You don't necessarily know who's right for you.
Right.
Right, or who you're right for.
You're right for
as
well. So you still need to do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of a... From 10 to 100, there's still a balancing act that you have to make between... short-term and long-term thinking.
Okay.
In the sense that I think that you need to create some, you need to keep creating traction and gaining customers.
Yeah.
So you have to do some very short-term tactics to just gain.
Ask growth. Friends for referrals, etc. That's what you mean.
Whatever. Anything. Like it could be advertising somewhere. It could be.
So whatever got you to 10, you got to keep
just
doing.
Keep doing
and
that.
Do it more of it.
Yeah. Do more of it.
My usual trick. Yeah.
Do,
got
do more
it.
Of
yeah.
It, right.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if it's like this is never going to scale. It doesn't matter, right?
Yep.
Just keep
doing it. Yeah.
Keep doing it.
Because before you know it, you'll be at 25.
Yes.
I've seen this happen. Yes. I know what you mean.
But at the same time, you need to at that point start doing a little bit of like long term.
Yeah. So some kind of marketing or outbound or is that what you mean?
Some kind of experiment
with something
that will scale or that you can do long term.
So usually those tend to be like a standard practice other people in your industry are doing. For example, because that's just the easiest one to read about and try, right?
Exactly.
Something just easy. Or you can go hire some company to do some early stuff for you because there's a lot of companies propping up doing outbound and stuff like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then... And this is not no exact science, but the framework that I use is that, you know, in the early days, from 10 to 100, you might be like at 80% short-term, 20% long-term, and then over time, that percentage needs to switch. And by the time you're at 1,000, you want to be like 80% long-term stuff, 20% short-term.
And let's define long-term and short-term in this context, because you're talking about path to customer.
Yes.
Right? And so I would say short-term would be things that aren't, that you might not keep doing in the future.
Right.
But, and even another caveat would be you might not keep doing in the same way in the future.
In the future.
Right? Like if the founder's doing all the outbound calls, that's not going to last forever.
Last forever.
Or like a founder's doing support, not going to last forever, right?
Or, you know, your investors are making intros.
Yeah, that's not going to last forever, right? So those are all short term.
Yeah.
And then long term would be like either, and let's bucket these two too, because I think this is really important, even long term past the 100 customers.
Yeah.
But long term to me would be like, there's a few buckets of this. It's basically marketing channels in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, so most of the stuff falls under marketing channels. I think there's three ways to look at marketing channels. One would be like, it's a growth hack, which means you're experimenting with something on the edge that other people might not be doing. It's not a common tactic.
Yep.
Then there's the, I would say, most common tactics. Paid acquisition, Facebook ads, Google ads, SEO, I would say, is common, maybe, and very long-term, not even maybe.
Yeah.
I'd say you need to start SEO from day zero, but that's a whole different story.
Yeah.
And then the third category is kind of like things in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't consider necessarily like Instagram an experiment now.
Yeah.
Because there's already a lot of people talking about how to get traffic, how to get users, even in B2B, believe it or not, on Instagram.
Yeah.
And so that's like the one where I'm like, there's enough content, but we still have to experiment with it.
Yeah.
So early on, you're just trying to do experiments and making sure that you have these three bets set up.
Yeah.
Right? And you're doing them.
Yes.
Right?
So, okay. So we got from 10 to 100.
Yeah.
That's typically... challenging. I mean, it always depends on the size of that customer, right? If it's like every deal is worth $1 million, that's going to be a longer road, more painful road than every deal is worth $10, right? Or it should. If it isn't, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
But then you get to 100. 100 to 1,000.
Yeah.
You know, that's where, you know, finally things will
Stelly
get easier.
Stelly has a smile on his face.
because, like, I'm saying this sarcastically to a degree because when you've been around long enough, like we've been, you stop believing in this. When we reach that stage, things will be easier.
Oh, no. It just gets harder. There's a different problem.
Yes,
I agree.
You just let go. But I still remember the time where I believed
I mean, that's the undertone of our whole podcast, right?
Yes.
It doesn't get easier.
It doesn't get easier.
Yeah.
So you get to 100.
Yeah.
How do you get to 1,000? What are the things that you need to change now? What's the difference in focus?
Yeah. So it doesn't get easier, but it gets some things do get easier, and other things are harder.
Exactly.
Yeah, so right. Let's that's talk what about happens.
What gets easier? What gets harder?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to think about it. I'd say let me try what gets easier.
Right.
I'll try to be positive today. Oh. So I think what gets easier is the fact that you've already done a bunch of stuff and tried a bunch of stuff, even if you haven't deliberately experimented for whatever reason. There's a whole bunch of stuff that's working that's getting you more and more customers. It's likely your rate of getting customers isn't one a week anymore.
Right.
It's more like somewhere from like 3 to 10, depending on your business and your tactics so far.
Right.
So you already got some repeatability. So the easiest thing to do there would be like, what are the things that we're doing that we need to spend more time doing because they are going to keep working if we just, but we just need to scale them, right? And this is when people start thinking about ROI calculations a lot more seriously, like how much time are we investing? How much money are we investing for the productivity of a certain channel or a certain tactic, right?
Right.
So you just need to start laying out all the foundations for tracking that, understanding that, measuring it, because if you don't do that, just like the check yourself before you wreck yourself, by the time you get to 1,000, you have no systems in place for repeatability.
Mm.
And thus you won't know how to get to 10,000 as fast as possible.
Yeah, it's going to be, if you're at 1,000 and you have no repeatability in the way you grow, that's going to be a pain.
So figure it out now by 100.
Yes.
You know, that's the exact right time to figure it out. Around 100, start figuring out the repeatability. But I think it's easier because you've got more to play with. You've got more things that you know already kind of work or work.
Yeah.
Right? Your experimentations are still in the three buckets, but I would say the buckets you might transition more towards like having more of these buckets going on. In the beginning, it might just be experiments in one of the three, depending on the strengths of the company. Like I know folks that will do paid acquisition from day zero because they just know how to do it.
Yeah.
And they enter markets where it'll work and they know it, right? So I don't want to give a caveat or anything like that. It just depends on your style. But when you're at 100, you want to invest a lot more in the repeatability of existing stuff that's working. That's what most people, you know, miss, right? The second thing I think you want to do and that's easier now. And I think that's the biggest thing that's easier. Everything else that I can think of is probably harder. Like you have to start hiring a team or finding the best people to master a marketing channel, right? And you have to go figure out how to optimize funnels in sales, right? And all these other problems because, you know, they're not a customer until they pay you.
Mm-hmm.
So that includes the sales process or whatever the hell else is going on, lifecycle emails and all this stuff. So the expertise that you start needing in the company, and this is where I see a lot of people do a lot of weird things, is immense. Like you need to start specializing. You need the company to start specializing on sales and marketing for things to work. This is when you start seeing people start thinking about early sales automation stuff, right? They might have not done it yet, right? Or marketing automation for that matter, and a whole bunch of stuff like that. I think that's probably pretty much the way I think about it. There's just a lot to play with. Now, the challenge is, this is what I wanted to mention before I'm done with it at least, but people forget there's two ways to scale this. You don't have to just hire people on your team and wait for that process to work for you with the interviews and all that to start tactically working on something. You can hire someone junior to just start with all the content out there if that's an approach for you, or you can start hiring consultants and people like that to start augmenting it and helping you. And and you know, you'd be surprised, like sometimes you can hit up people that are working full time and they'll help you on the side.
Yeah. So I agree with everything that you said on that end. The one thing that I'll add is when you go from 100 to 1,000 is that I think as you're getting closer to 1,000, you will start to develop a need to anticipate for the next stage much more than you needed before. You go from 0 to 10. That's really you're in like trying to figure out who we are. What do
you don't
we
know
do.
What 100 is going to look like at all.
Yeah. And then when you're 10 to 100, you're still so short term that you're just like, let's keep doing
that.
An experiment.
Let's talk about that. That's good.
But when you're like 100 to 1,000, you know, I don't know where in that the transition starts, you know, but once you have a few hundred, now you need to start doing things today so that when you hit 1,000, your business is not like in real trouble.
So let's tackle it like this. Let's tackle it by areas of responsibility and or departments.
Yeah.
So pick one and start with that one on what you need to do at this stage on that one. Because you might not have people in this stuff, but your company's going to be doing a lot of this stuff by now.
Yes. I mean, I think that so one thing that's not even a department question is just chances are 0 to 100 customers, you're going to have a much flatter structure in the team.
Yeah.
And you go from 100 to 1,000, you're going to have, because you need to grow the team, you need to start thinking about how to build teams, departments? How are you going to create an org structure in the company?
Yeah.
And that's something that most companies, because we're all in this race to keep growing, we never take the time to think through or anticipate, because it's not tomorrow. You know, we just grew one employee. Like, I don't need to think about the org chart right now. No. But if you don't think about it, there's going to be some, like, Frankenstein org chart that is generated.
That develops. Yeah. That think develops about it early. I agree.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That develops on its own. So that to me is like a classical mistake that I've made where you don't anticipate because you don't need it today and tomorrow.
Yeah.
But then when you start thinking about it, it's because you're now experiencing the pain of lacking it, right?
Yep.
And now fixing that is a much harder task than anticipating for it a little bit.
So, you know, I love that from a team perspective, right? And the other thing that I found valuable in the same regard, department by department, is like, if you think about, and I'll give one clear example, but if you think about what's happening in that area, right? Let's say customer support, it's all going to 10x unless you dramatically change something. And by the way, you're also changing things like your product and stuff. So it might be more than 10x or less than 10x. It's up to you.
Right.
And obviously you want it to be not 10x,
because
that means you have to 10x whatever you're doing right now.
With people.
So the kind of things we start doing there are, we make sure we have a support system or some way to quantify all the tickets, what's going on, how many of them by, you know, and we've given this tip before, but like, you just quantify the support and start attacking reducing the support.
Because
by the time you get to 100, you don't have to hire another 3 support people if you have one.
Right.
Right.
So that's a good one. I think that, you know, the other thing you need to think about is kind of like anticipating how the individuals on your company and on your team, are they going to be able to grow and scale as nicely to that next stage?
Yeah.
Right. So there's junior talent, and these people were great at the very early stage. They were helpful in learning these new areas and getting from 0 to 10 and 10 to 100. But can they also grow at the same pace from 100 to 1,000, 1,000 to 10,000? Or will we need more senior talent?
And
that's something you never thought about.
Right.
Or even reversely, you might have hired somebody from the 10 to 100 stage that came in from another startup and just had like, was 1 year ahead of you. So they came in and they're becoming a rock star. You love that person. That person is amazing. That person brought so much ROI. You fall in love with them, but you miss the point. You miss asking the question, why was this person so good at the things that they were good at? And will this still be true once we're 10x bigger? Yeah, because this person was a year ahead of me.
Yeah.
So they came in and they knew all the answers, they had all the mistakes to avoid, but they were not 5 years ahead of me. So next year, their power to anticipate is gone.
If they're not learning.
Right?
If you don't set it up right.
If
they don't know what the next thing is.
Yes.
You're right. Their job was so easy. Now it might be harder.
Now it might be harder. And they might grow into it, but they might not.
That's right.
But it's important that you don't fall in love so much with
their current
performance.
They are blinded to that. That'll hit you with a ton of bricks.
Oh,
that's a good one.
Oh, yeah. So I think looking at your team and anticipating
growth needs, basically.
Growth needs, right? And like assessing individuals' performance, not just based on where we are right now, but where we're going to be tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's, again, something you don't really need. Like, actually, one interesting thing about what we're discussing is that everything we're discussing at each stage, if you do it a stage before, is bad.
That's right. Like, that's exactly right.
That is most of the mistakes we tell people to stop doing is because they're doing something at stage one from 0 to 1
that's
or
right.
1 to 10 customers.
Yeah.
They should be doing it 100 to 1,000
that's
customers.
That's right. That's
so
right.
So you do, it's like seasons,
point.
Right? You do the wrong thing at the right thing at the wrong season, and you try.
It's the wrong weather.
You
can't snowboard in the summer.
And you can, you know, whatever, put the seeds in winter
that's right.
for them to grow. Right? That's just the wrong season, although you